First of all, when you're speaking, whether it's to one person or 100 people, are you speaking to speak or are you speaking to be heard? Mm-hmm. Because we need to think, what can actually be received? So what does your audience need to hear versus what do you want to say? When you're on stage, when you hit that moment to connect to your audience, your goal is not to remember, it's to connect. Mm-hmm. And so in order to do that, when words exit my mouth, I need to have the thought of, did it land?
Mm-hmm. Hey, welcome to another episode of the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our cup of coffee. Today's guest is Minna Taylor. She is the author of a brand new book, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that from a communication standpoint, speaking with confidence, but even having your authentic voice, understanding really the conscious awareness of how you're presenting information, how you're presenting yourself. It's a really eye-opening conversation. And I think you're going to get a lot out of it. Before we jump into that, I do want to invite you to subscribe. Yes. Whatever you're listening, wherever you're listening, however you're listening, just reach over and hit the subscribe button. Also, give us a rating if you wouldn't mind while you're on that podcast platform as well. We definitely will appreciate it. If you'd like the video version of this as well, if you'd like to see a copy of Minna's book, well, you'll have to find that on YouTube and Facebook. Just search for LOCDOC and it will pop up there and you can hit subscribe, hit follow, all of those things so that you can stay connected with us because we have a brand new episode every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. and we want you to see every single one of those. So grab a cup of coffee, get ready for this conversation.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes and it's time for a coffee break. Time for a coffee break.
Oh, yeah. All right, welcome to the podcast, Minna. Thank you for being here today.
I'm very excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Chad.
So for those that are watching on the YouTube video version or the Facebook video version, you've got a nicely placed copy of your book over your shoulder. We were just joking about it because it's like, I don't know, 4 foot tall, but on screen, it looks like the right size for a book. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I it's an optical illusion that I didn't anticipate, but I'm really enjoying the benefits of.
Now you just carry it around with you just randomly to places, just set it in a just put it in my coffee shop while I'm drinking. Yeah. Okay. Sure. we're going to be talking about communication, about public speaking and telling story, kind of getting communication across through all kinds of forms. So that's going to be kind of our topic for today, which I'm pretty excited about. But before we do that, we have to do rapid fire 5 randomly selected questions just to get under your skin with unknown point values. And then we will give you a score at the end. Are you ready?
I'm prepared to rise to the occasion.
All right. Question number 1, what's the last thing that you've been overthinking?
Oh, golly, I'm doing a 2-week tour in Europe. So I'm just like, it's just like occupying my mind in a really annoying way.
Just overthinking it, like flights getting canceled.
How do I get from one place? Am I going to have Wi-Fi? Where does the train land? Yeah.
All of those things. Have you traveled to these places before?
Yes.
Oh, well then what are you worried about? This is just
COVID. I don't know what's shifted.
Everything's changed. Okay. Question number 2. What are you most grateful for?
I practice gratitude consistently. And so it can be anywhere from like just taking long walks and being so grateful for an able body that comes into my landscape very often, all the way to just like gratitude for my family. I am just incredibly, incredibly blessed.
All right. Question number 3, what is the most embarrassing moment that you've ever had in public?
Oh gosh. Embarrassing to me or embarrassing to watch? I think those are 2 different things. So I think embarrassment comes in retrospect because typically I just really go for it. But I would say in college, I was part of a sketch improv group and part of our job was to go and sell tickets on the street to get audience to come in. And we would openly do improvised scenes on the street. And there was one where I got into like an argument with my boyfriend and it just really escalated and people got like deeply concerned. And then somebody came in and intervened.
Oh, this is just all an act.
Yeah. Oops. Sorry. Just kidding.
Got real. It got real for a few moments.
Correct.
All right. Question number four. What is the first thing you notice when you meet new people?
Their eye contact and breathing.
Eye contact and breathing. You just randomly pick that up whenever you meet new people.
So you notice when you meet new people, if they're kind of like, hi, or if they're like, hello. And then if you're breathing, then there's an ease about them.
Interesting. Okay. I like it. Question number five. What is the craziest thing that you've ever done?
Probably spend a month in India. Or, no, just kidding. Or I went on a 2-week sailing adventure with a relative stranger. And it was just us on a boat with no working bathroom, no running water, no refrigeration. It was a sailboat.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did you sail to?
We sailed down the Intracoastal Waterway. So we went from Charleston down to Florida.
Okay. Very cool. So I am a big admirer of sailboats. I don't think I could, especially 2 weeks with all the no running water and all that stuff, that would be a little excessive, but I like the idea of a sailboat, but actually getting on one for 2 weeks would be a bit of a struggle.
It was tight. Luckily, it was just me and this one other person. But it was a blast. I saw some of the most epic sunsets I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And was like away from everything in the middle of the United States. There was nothing to be seen. It was amazing.
Now, did you actually sail or was it motoring?
We were motoring
because
we could get the sail up. So it took us 2 weeks. Even though he was a sailor, but we just couldn't thread it because the sail was too big.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. I'm sure there's tons of stories there.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, thanks for playing Rapid Fire. You passed. We'll give you a score of 812.
Oh, that sounds impressive. Out of what? A million or out of 1,000? Because that makes sense.
All right. Well, congratulations for that. Well, thank you for joining us today. We're going to be talking about communication, talking about... So describe to me, because communication to me is just this big, broad topic. I have admired people from afar, those that are great storytellers, those that can command a stage, those that can really command your attention in a small group. Like, those are things that I, like, have always been an admirer of. Now it's translating that into the daily practical. How can I be a better communicator on a daily basis with every single person that I come across? Because sometimes when I say something to people, it makes a lot of sense to me, but the message doesn't always convey. So give us a quick little overview of communication as it pertains to your perspective.
Okay. Communication as I view it. So first of all, let me give you a sense of my background, which is as an actor.
Ooh.
So I went to NYU.
Screamed at your boyfriend in the middle of the street.
I did. Yeah. I am my fake boyfriend. It is not real. It was all pretend. So I started as an actor. I went to NYU. I then got my master's degree in acting. And why that's important is because what I was practicing in, what I was ultimately getting trained to do, was tell the truth with strategy.
Okay.
So what that means is being present in the moment, being active in your listening and responding, being adaptable, full freedom in body and physical and vocal expression, responsiveness, you know, all this stuff that is in pursuit of an objective that is potentially predetermined or, in the case of improv, discovered along the way. Yes. But you're immediate in that discovery, even if the outcome is already predefined. And so what that requires in order to do that effectively, whether you're an actor or whether you're a regular human, is to understand that communication is a physical activity.
Okay.
So when we're thinking, I say my communication, it like comes to what comes out of the mouth. What you write is I can help with, but it's not my specialty. So it's really what comes out of the mouth. And so if we think about it that way, then it has to become a physical practice. Because when we speak, we are releasing voice. Voice is vibration. So just like any instrument that vibrates, the instrument has to be tuned accordingly. That means then the breath, which is the thing that allows the voice to come out, needs to live freely in the body and support effective and dynamic and free vocalization. And the body needs to be loose and agile and adaptable in order for all of that to function effectively and optimally. So this requires sort of an undoing of habits that get in our way that we develop over time. So when we see great speakers, or when we are in the presence of somebody that feels influential, even in sort of these informal one-on-one interactions, what we're really experiencing, this goes back to one of your rapid fire questions, eye contact and breath, is, oh, someone that's really sort of settled and present and authentic in their body, they are actively engaged in receiving information and responding accordingly. Mm-hmm. There is that moment of awareness of receive and respond versus react. Mm-hmm. And all of that comes out with thoughtful execution of an idea or a point. So that's what we're talking about when we're talking about communication, connecting to breath, connecting to our why, connecting to a thought or a point, and then allowing our body to share that with a level of dynamics, agility, presence, and purpose, ultimately.
Yeah, I read a book one time. The title of it was Everyone Communicates, Few Connect. And I think that even just that title sums up what I just heard you describe is we all talk and we all communicate and we all have those expressions and we all do that, but very few of us can make that connection on a consistent basis to where it is actually meaningful. And I think that's what I'm hearing you say is that part of it, and maybe I'm jumping ahead too far here, but that part of it is something that you can train yourself or get better at.
100%. And knowing that part of the process will be highly technical, will feel at some points mechanical or inauthentic. The goal is through consistent practice, through consistent awareness and conscious observation of self within those situations, we will then move into a flow state with it. So in sort of that, because I can move my voice up and down in ways that feel totally dynamic, but if it's not connected to something that feels holistic and intentional, then we can feel sort of this human disconnect. And so the real goal is to incorporate that sense of humanity, to incorporate your authentic voice, and then let it come alive with intention.
How do you find your authentic voice?
Again, going back to this notion of undoing, instead of thinking about what do I need to do in order to find it, it's usually about what do I need to stop doing in order to find it. And so the way in which we engage in the world can be conditioned, can condition us to either limit ourselves or ask a lot of questions because we default to uncertainty, to sort of shy away from speaking up or to compensate for anxiety by over speaking, to be assertive as opposed to be allowing. And so a lot of that comes down to the breath. So moving out of unconscious habit into conscious behavior is typically about relieving the body of historical tensions, is typically about understanding these habits that have become so unconscious, like jumping in to defend oneself as opposed to listening more deeply to the question or contribution. Simple things like that. Once we become aware of them, we now realize, oh, if I actually do less and allow for more, that's where the opportunity lies for me to actually reveal what is true to me versus what I've been conditioned into.
We understand the frustrations HOA board members and property managers face when deciding the best solution for their HOA and pool security. Should we use a keypad, hand out keys, or install a key card system? Do we even need cameras? These are some of the questions that are difficult to navigate, and we're here to help. At LockDock Security, we've spent over 20 years working with homeowners associations and property managers to find a system that best fits the pool and HOA needs. camera systems for the front gate or front entrance, key card systems for the pool gates, or simply updating the gate so that it meets safety and code compliance. We like to take the guesswork out of the process to answer any questions and help find the right solution. Our mission is to help you protect your people and your property, and that includes pools. Contact our team today to schedule your free consultation for your community.
So self-awareness is huge, right? And we've been kind of diving into a lot of this over the years with personality assessments and all these types of things. So now that you have become aware of who you are, it doesn't necessarily mean that you get that excuse anymore, that you get a pass on it, because you're now ultimately aware of this is how I react, this is how I respond, this is how I see things. So taking that into this form from a communication standpoint, how do you... There's 1,000 different personality assessments out there, maybe more than that, and all of these different systems and processes. Communication assessment. How can you walk me through something like that so that you're now aware of it outside of just recording yourself and listening to it and going, oh, my God. But how do you assess so you can become self-aware?
Yeah, it's interesting because this is where we separate the I brain from the my brain.
Okay.
Right. So to be the watcher of the self versus just the doer of the thing. Mm-hmm. And that's happens through the process of observation. And so first it's about how do I objectively observe what's happening? And that means distancing from the self engaged in the thing itself. So if I'm interacting with, for example, someone that historically triggers me or that I feel really defensive around or preparing to go meet family, right? And you're like, oh God, I know my aunt's going to be there. She's just the worst, right? It's like, you know, we all have these narratives. It's like, okay.
We have the same aunt.
Yeah, I know. We're related. Huh, surprise. it's saying, okay, first of all, let me objectively, and why objectivity is important is because now it depersonalizes it and we can look at it as fact, right? So this is now information or data that we're collecting. And we, once we have all the data, so A, I prepare by creating context around this interaction. B, how does my breath respond to that? C, does my body tense up in preparation to meet that moment? Once I'm there, do I retract or do I, you know, advance? Do I advance aggressively? Am I passive aggressive? How does that impact my voice? So collecting all of this data is the first step. So objective observation. And then once that happens, you now need to move into a process, which is called the conscious redirection of use. So if I now become aware in these micro moments of the way in which my body responds, because again, it's a physical activity, the way we can't necessarily intervene in our mental habits as quickly as we can in our physical habits. So when we, or at least make shifts, right? So when we meet that moment, now I can consciously say, okay, I prepare through tension and retraction. Mm-hmm. Now I can consciously direct myself to drop my shoulders and connect to my breath. And so over time, mm-hmm. that will then train your body to move out of preparatory or ineffective use mm-hmm. into optimal functioning that will allow that authenticity to emerge more freely.
So here maybe is, I'll give you some information or some practical example that I have experienced over the years, and you can kind of work this into what you're discussing, and maybe it's off base or not, but I'll just throw that out there. I have had the opportunity to give talks or speeches or presentations in front of groups before. And when I first started doing it, I would go through and have all of my information prepared. I would walk up in front of that group and blast through all of my information in, you know, half the time that I was allotted. And also when I would walk off, I was out of breath. Like effectively I had gone for whatever that time period was without breathing because I was blasting through all my material because I tried to memorize it and I needed to get it from memorization out of my mouth in rapid succession and just basically unleashed this fire hose of information and walked away going, okay, I got it all out, but also I'm exhausted because I didn't breathe for the last 15 minutes. Is that kind of anything that you're talking about?
So one is about like everyday use. Mm-hmm. But of course, we know how you do anything is how you do everything.
Yep.
So if you tend to just like get it all out there because you were someone that's just like, yeah, I'm done. I don't know. Okay, move on. Right. Maybe that then shows up in the way you do public speaking. Or I'm really shy about being seen when I'm being put on the spot to communicate sort of my expertise that I don't have at most certainty in. Mm-hmm. So then I'm going to speed through it and hope no one notices.
Sure.
Right. So that then would carry into. So that's the first thing. But you said so much stuff here that I love that is we can now extend this into real life. So let's leave conscious redirection of use behind, but we can use that same principle in understanding sort of this experience that you're reflecting, which, by the way, I hear so much. I work with hundreds of public speakers every single week. Mm-hmm. And I hear this. This is a common narrative. So thank you so much for offering it. You're not alone. So there are a couple things here. First of all, when you're speaking, whether it's to one person or 100 people, are you speaking to speak or are you speaking to be heard? Mm-hmm. Speaking to speak without the intention of being heard is actually making it about you. Mm-hmm. As opposed to making it about an offering, therefore making your intention to be a valuable contributor to others. Mm-hmm. If that's our mindset, that now shifts our responsibility to show up in a space of generosity mm-hmm. versus self-protection. Mm-hmm. So holistically, that's what we need to think about. Now, yeah, go ahead. You have a thought?
I think you said something that's very valid there, and I want to kind of attack it from a different way. If I'm speaking just to speak or speaking to be heard versus speaking to speak, the way that I would that I'm hearing that is speaking because I need to get this information out and I have this laundry list of knowledge that I need you to understand. And so I've got this allotted amount of time and I've got to get all of it to you versus here is a subset or here is a part of this information. And I would rather spend a little bit of time saturating on it and getting that point across rather than letting you like basically forcing you to understand everything that I can communicate is kind of the way that I hear that. And I can wholeheartedly connect with because I think, you know, especially if you're new to a public speaking process, or speaking in front of a group of people in your office. It doesn't necessarily have to be at a large group. It's, okay, this is my one time, so I've got to tell everything I know, which is going to get the rushed, like kind of intense part of that communication versus I'm just sharing this one component and I want to make sure that I get this one component to the audience versus just saying, check, I got it out. Is that kind of what I'm hearing you say?
Yes, and.
Okay.
That's about content. And when we think about...
That's a very improv answer. Yes, and.
Always. That's how I live my life. Yes, and. So that's about content, which is a very important consideration, even in moments that are extemporaneous, because we need to think what can actually be received. So what does your audience need to hear versus what do you want to say? And we cannot tell them everything. Mm-hmm. So retention in real time differs from our ability to retain when reading, because we don't have the time to sit and reflect and reread and revisit. We have to receive. So it needs to be based around a singular point. Mm-hmm. There needs to be space for pauses. We need to incorporate moments of reflective consideration. That all helps in service of retention of the listener. So that's the thing. That's one of the reasons why limiting the amount of content you give yourself responsibility to communicate is important. Now let's move this to the place of the speaker.
Yeah. Well, on that side too, I think one of the things that I hear you talk about there as well is especially if you're speaking maybe on the same topic or speaking on a particular topic that you're knowledgeable about, you're bringing so much knowledge and so much experience that maybe the listener, this is their first time hearing it. Mm-hmm. Whereas you're talking at a very high level of confidence and knowledge based on that, you're now expecting everybody else to come up to that level of knowledge and experience very quickly. And they're going like, hold on a second, this is the first time I've heard it. So the limiting of that content, I think, is a value add there as well, right? Because you're saying, okay, rather than letting you in on all of my expertise, I'm just going to give you a little bit of information, right? That is going to be practical, can be used, and it doesn't take so many calories for you to burn to process this, right?
Yeah, well, there's also knowing your audience. Mm-hmm. So I work with a lot of medical professionals or legal professionals or science professionals. And if you're speaking to a layman audience, you're going to have a very different level of messaging than if you're speaking to colleagues. And so that's something to be really conscious of, is who is your audience? What is their baseline? How can I create an average layer of understanding and then build from there? So again, from a content perspective, that's a really great reflection.
Yeah.
When we're thinking, going back to this notion of moving through and speaking to be heard, mm-hmm. let's talk about the impact of that on the speaker.
Okay.
So you're talking about leaving the stage feeling out of breath, mm-hmm. and you probably didn't breathe. And the first rule of public speaking, breathe, don't die.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and if we go back to sort of the things that we understand when we receive someone's confidence, when we are present and engaged and influenced by someone's communication, it's all about the breath. Breath is flowing freely. The body is operating freely. The voice and body is free to express and be adaptable in that landscape of play. You know, that is what's perceived. So if the breath is not the driver of all of those functions, you've now lost humanity and you've lost your ability to connect. Mm-hmm. So if we're speaking to be heard, the breath is important because it operates in a cycle, inhale, exhale. And that includes an energetic exchange with your audience, inhale, exhale. So active listening can still be present even if the other person isn't talking.
Yeah.
Because we have to say, okay, am I, as these words are leaving my mouth, I'm not focused on the words because I don't memorize ever.
Mm-hmm.
Never script. Keep it consistent. Never script it. So if I give myself that opportunity, mm-hmm. now I can get out of my head and into my heart. And now if I'm speaking from my heart, quick, clear, if you need to prepare, fine. Get your bullet points together, fine. Understand the flow, fine. What is the desired outcome? Great. But ultimately, when you're on stage, when you hit that moment to connect to your audience, your goal is not to remember, it's to connect.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to do that, when words exit my mouth, I need to have the thought of, did it land?
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm speaking too quickly, I cannot check in to that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm like, take it, as opposed to I'm offering it and being sure that you've received it.
Yeah. No, that is a very, very fair point and very valid, which I guess it may be, and I'm trying to process this from a listener standpoint as well, because you know, maybe you've experienced this at whatever scale, but yeah, you totally are at that point. If you've worked off complete memorization or you're trying to communicate that, you are effectively force feeding it out. You're not offering it up for people to take it. This is what I've got to say. And I'm getting through it regardless of if it is relevant or I've lost the audience or not, but I've got to get it. And especially on the scripted side, it is really forced.
I like to say, if you're not speaking to be heard, put it in an email.
Ooh.
You know, if you're not like, hey, person, we're in this together. I'm here to deliver something to you. Oh, you didn't get it? Let me shift my tone and make you pay attention a little bit. Oh, no, I lost you. Don't go away from me. I see you. Come back. If you're not speaking to be heard, put in an email. I'll read it later and we'll both be happier as a result.
That's a valid point. If you've done all the work descripting it, then just go ahead and hit send.
Yeah. Or practice a lot and keep it alive.
Yes. Okay. So knowing what the audience needs to hear versus what I want to say, and then knowing the audience based off of their baseline of knowledge, that is something that you could probably carry heavily, no matter if it's one or 1,000, getting very intentional with that, because you're having a conversation with somebody based off of you're either going to be boring somebody because you're being condescending and over-explaining everything, or you are talking over their head because you assume that they have this knowledge already. Both of those are huge misses.
Yeah, absolutely. I like to say assumption is the toxic killer of conversation. And so it's really about and if you don't know your audience, start by inquiring, like, hey, are you familiar with the notion of confident behavior? Like, what is your understanding about that? If you have the opportunity to ask those reflective questions, if you're giving a talk or it's a formalized prepared moment, then you have a lot of opportunity to get information around the nature of the audience ahead of time.
Sure.
Right. So do all you can to know who you're speaking to and also be available to adapt. And that is why active listening, the notion of connecting to the breath, is so important. Because if you're condescending to someone by, you know, you're speaking to a Nobel laureate and you're like, anyway, have you heard of physics? And they're like, get out of here. Right? And that's when you really need to be able to understand the nuance of the information that they're giving you, even if it's nonverbal. And you cannot be in tune to that if you're not breathing and if you're not actively listening.
It's an interesting, just as a side note, I heard someone at a conference one time give a keynote. So they were a paid outside speaker. And again, what you just said is it's a prepared statement. You've got a lot of lead up to being able to get all the information, knowledge base and all that. They mispronounced the name of the organization the entire speech. I was just like,
oh, that is like cringe worthy, Chad. No. Okay, for everyone listening at home, like, don't do that. There's no excuse for that to happen ever.
Okay. Back on track. So, you can ask reflective questions whenever you're in a smaller environment. If you're given more prepared, you've got to get a better understanding outside of that. From a confidence standpoint, the name of your book is The Confident Body. So I'm going to make some assumptions here that, not to reflect back on the previous statement in a negative way. But so when I'm when I'm communicating to anybody, communicating to you one-on-one, we're through a screen right now versus, in front of an audience, where does confidence play into it? Or why does it matter?
Yeah, great question. Confidence is something we perceive. So it's not actually something that we do. Confidence is perceived when certain behaviors are present. So if you're attempting to explore confidence, or if you want to give off the perception of confidence, right? Rather than I want to be confident in this, it's like, okay, do it. What does that mean to you? Do confidence. And if that's the information I give you, then you're likely working towards some archetype that may be outside of your authentic behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe you think it's like, hey, everybody, I'm Meta, you know, and like you're an introvert and that just feels so out of alignment to you. And so if we now think about confidence as something that is A, available to everybody, and B, a set of behaviors versus an specific outcome, mm-hmm. Now we can think about it in terms of calibrating it to a way of being. So again, going back to, and I've mentioned this a few times, but I'll break it down really, really specifically, which is connecting to breath, openness and body, freedom of vocal and physical expression with the added condition of play, which is the intangible space of unpredictability and aliveness. So if I have open body and I have open breath and I'm dynamic in voice and body, but then I'm, you know, really just like not bringing any aliveness to it or being adaptable, then I'm missing a piece of that very important puzzle. So play is actually the primary component here. This is what allows me to adapt and respond and think creatively and be agile and be imaginative. You surprise myself and delight my audience, right? That is what is ultimately going to be the driver of this. It also leads to resilience and risk-taking and availability to failure, living on the precipice of the unanticipated. And when all of those components are there in confident behavior, whether it's being the one person, again, or 100 people, that is what people will respond to. And then they'll say, oh, that was a confident person, as opposed to, wow, they looked like what I perceive to be confident, It will rather be they will perceive confidence regardless of what it looks like, which, by the way, will be ultimately unique to you.
Does comfort or comfortability play into confidence? Because I've always found that a new pair of shoes and a new pair of socks helps with confidence as well.
Wear like some, you know, like athleisure wear. I think that's pretty important. I think what it means is if you can be free in body and connected to breath and open, then like do you and like meet the moment, but like do it feels right to you.
Well, so from the authentic standpoint, I think that's really where getting back to that, right? If you're trying too hard, then the confidence is going to be a struggle. I guess that's a question, more of a statement. I'm trying to process that while we're having this conversation. If I'm working so hard to be out and present something that is non-authentic or inauthentic, then I'm going to lack confidence, or it's going to, or it is not going to come across as confidence in that aspect.
Yeah, so the latter. It will not be perceived as confident because there will be tension present. Mm-hmm. Because in that trying to, tension is an inherent aspect. In the allowing for, we are now free of tension. And so that's when confidence has a better opportunity to be perceived.
Okay, so all of this, I want to point back to something that you said earlier about objective observation. How does that happen?
All right. So first of all, we have to, and I write about this in the book, which is like, we all have the best intention to, for example, start a meditation practice. Let's say that. Let's use that as an example. I'm going to start meditating. Great. That's my intention. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, 2 days later, I'm like, wait, what was I going to start doing? Mm-hmm. So the first step is remembering that you intend to observe yourself, right? Put a reminder in your phone. It's building the habit of even incorporating that into your mental landscape, which is easier said than done. So that's almost the hardest part. Once it now becomes a part of your regular routine to check in with yourself, oh, how is I breathing? Even if that's reflectively, even if it's not in the moment, was I breathing in that moment? Oh, yeah, my throat felt a little tight as I was talking. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wasn't really listening. Oh, I was pretty quick to react there. I wonder what was going on with my body. So having these moments of distinct curiosity about the physical use will allow you to then objectively observe what was happening. So observation doesn't have to happen in real time. It can happen in reflection. And that's when you can start collecting that data.
Looking to make your conference stand out? Send your attendees home with more than just memories. Book our professional portrait booth today and get a fresh, clean headshot for each attendee. We handle all the heavy lifting, from setup and tear down to post-processing and final delivery. It's honestly just that easy. Contact us today to add unique value to your conference.
So objective observation is effectively being intentional about, in real time or retrospectively, looking back at how you interacted or how you were handling a current situation, a specific situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And that what that allows for is, let's say you were in a heated conflict.
Okay.
Right. And instead of now looking back on it and being like, you know, F that person and like they were jerks and like I'm self-righteous or like I was such a jerk. I can't believe I did that. So if we now move away from an opinion mm-hmm. about what happened. And instead I come down and say, okay, when they approached me, I actually prepared to meet them in a way that like was prepared for conflict. Mm-hmm. What that meant in my body was I tensed in my lower back. I could mm-hmm. feel it. And therefore my breath was tight and I was like prepared, you know, to like meet that moment with aggression. Okay, so that's interesting information. Then I was yelling, and after the fact, my throat started to hurt. Well, that also tells me that I was probably speaking from here mm-hmm. as opposed to in my body and allowing my breath to feel free and at ease there. What that extends into is I probably wasn't listening and I was more concerned about being right. So there's all this stuff that you can start to collect data around that has nothing to do with your opinion about yourself or others.
Interesting. Okay. So that process, everybody could start doing immediately, right? Just starting to be intentional about that and kind of checking yourself after any interaction on a one-on-one basis. How did I handle that? How was my body posturing? How was my voice? How was my breathing? All of those things, because that is really going to point back to the authentic versus inauthentic setting that you want to be in and how you're being perceived at that point.
Absolutely. And I want to take a second to talk about this word authenticity, because it's bandied around a lot. And I think it's lost some of its currency and is kind of like a catch-all.
Sure.
Or something that has yet to be defined. Mm. So when we think about authenticity, it is the presence of truth, both in the receiving and the telling. And so this has nothing to do with ideology. This is literally about, I am speaking from such a place of sincerity, right? Even if that might be not what someone wants to hear or vulnerable for me to share. And so if truth is present, so if we're present to the experience of truth, both in the giving and the receiving, then authenticity will be there. Now, how that lives in the body is, it feels, once we are complete in the expression of that thought, right, or that experience or that impulse, our body feels at ease, as if there's no residue of incompletion. If we're speaking from that place where I'm like telling you something and it's vulnerable as hell, don't get me ready, wrong, right? It's real challenging to be that transparent, but there's also something deeply liberating once you teach your body to move in that space, right? And that doesn't mean without compassion, that doesn't mean without emotional intelligence. And again, strategy is a huge component here. So using words effectively to ensure that your message is going to be internalized and received in a positive way, or at least a way that leads to some sort of resolution, but it should feel like there's a layer of completion there. So I'm now done, right? I'm not holding on to anything because I've expressed it fully, and my breath and my body and my voice were behind it.
And you weren't a jerk necessarily.
Correct. Yeah. I like to say, live your truth, speak your truth, be your truth unapologetically all the time, as long as it's coming from love. If you don't have the like intention to do harm or hurt someone's feelings, you're good, right? It's fine.
Authenticity is not a pass for being a jerk.
Correct. Yeah. I write about it in my book. I forgot what I said. Then you're just a jerk walking through life, like hurting someone else's feelings. Like, that is not what we're in service of here. Absolutely not.
that's yes, exactly. Okay. So we are kind of in this phase where we are objectively observing, and then we are consciously redirecting use. So talk me through that, because I want to understand how I can kind of bring these two things together. So now I've become intentional about observing my actions, the way that I operate, my breathing, my communication style, my voice, my inflection, all those types of things. Now I actually want to do something about it rather than just go, oh, okay, well, that worked, or it didn't work, it sucked.
If we're working under the premise of how you do anything is how you do everything, then I will always give people.
I like that quote. How we do anything is how we do everything.
Yeah.
I just wanted to underline that. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah. It's, I know it from the Alexander technique, but it's also sort of a piece of wisdom from Buddhism. Like it's sort of everywhere. It's an anonymous quote from someone at some point. But working under this premise, that now gives us permission to not feel the responsibility or arduous task to address this conscious redirection in moments that have consequence. So instead, I can say, oh, I tend to have a habit of tensing my shoulders. So now when I'm washing dishes, I'm going to be very consciously aware of letting my shoulder blades drop down and back, lifting my heart center and coming into my lower back space and releasing the belly. Oh, that actually feels nice. So I can literally consciously redirect my physical body, right? The my body versus the I, right? It's not about me. It's I am living in a vessel that is ultimately created of physical stuff based on habit. So now I can start directing it. Like any other practice, it will feel burdensome at times, uninspired often, very technical in nature. It's like playing notes on a piano. First, you're like beep, 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 And then all of a sudden you're like, so know that that is inevitably part of the process, but it is going to be sort of these in moments of acute intervention to say, what would happen if I dropped my breath into my belly? What would happen if I allowed my tongue to rest on the bottom of my mouth while I was watching television? What would happen if, when I was driving, I actually released my hips instead of pulling my legs into my body? I let them sort of chill out. What would happen if?
Mm-hmm. I just all of a sudden felt very relaxed. I was
once you bring consciousness to it, all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, I don't have to do that much.
Yeah. Well, I was also thinking about the fact that when I watch television, I probably sit there with my mouth open. And so I was thinking, what if while I'm watching television, I actually intentionally close my mouth and focus on it?
Yeah. I mean, it's essentially engaging with curiosity will always be of benefit to someone looking at you. Like, you definitely let flies come in. There's all behind the scenes nonverbal communication happening there. I see you. So I think it really is about like harnessing that curiosity, that sense of wonder. And what you're talking about is like, we can work way less than we need to. We work way too hard. We work hard anyway. Why are we doing more than is necessary to build relationships, to engage in everyday tasks, to rise to the occasion, to excel, to feel ambitious, to do nothing? Why are we working harder than is necessary? So isn't it a worthwhile investigation and curiosity to say, how can I actually do less in my body to now allow for more in those moments when my body is called to rise to the occasion? What would that look like?
Yeah. Great information here. I'm trying to be intentional with our time, which is something that apparently I say all the time. But you've got a book called The Confident Body. It is just over your left shoulder. So it's there and it's ready to go. I'm sure we can get that where? Amazon, all of the places? Yep.
Amazon for sure. It's coming out on Barnes & Noble. Not there yet. It just got released as of this interview like a month ago. So we're still working on it, but for sure Amazon.
Very cool. And then they can find out more information about you by visiting a website, I'm sure.
Yep. So you can go to my company page, which is energizeyourvoice.net, or you can check out my founder page, which is minnataylor.com. And of course, you can follow me on Instagram at minnataylor_EYV.
All right. Minna, thank you for joining us today. Oh, one last question that I forgot to ask you earlier. You said you're in Brooklyn.
Uh-huh.
Best pizza.
Oh, man. So I'm part of a run club. And one time I went on a pizza run and we explored. Oh,
come on now.
Yeah, for real. And so we explored all different types of pizza. So when we talk about pizza, we have to talk about different kinds of pizza, but ultimately I just like a classic Brooklyn slice. And there's a place near me called Smiler's Pizza and it's awesome. Like, it's hard to get a bad slice. And so really like it's more loyalty than the best, I think, is really what it comes down to in Brooklyn. Who are you loyal to? Yeah. So, and Smiler's Pizza.
Smiler's. All right. Well, we'll have to check it out. Minna, thanks again for joining us today. Man, it was fun. What a blast. And now I have another new pizza place to try out in Brooklyn. And I'm also very interested in this sailing thing. But anyways, we'll talk more about that. Thank you for joining us today. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe. Click the subscribe button wherever you're listening or watching to this. It's somewhere close by. So make sure you take care of that. We'll see you next week right here on the Coffee Break Podcast.